Wake Up Time, written by This Apple Pie Life, and read by Hello Moon. Summary. Nightmare? Eddie asks, squeezing Gareth's shoulder. Several, I think, Gareth says. Still kicking, Eddie promises. And that's exactly what Gareth needs to see with his own eye. The only one he's still got. Me too, Gareth answers, and falls back asleep. Gareth runs up and shoves Goody into Jeff and keeps running. Goody won't catch him, never has, not once, and Jeff won't even give chase. Gareth laughs and runs until he turns around to look back, only to realize he's all alone. They're gone. He has run too far, too fast, and now he's lost sight of them. He turns and runs back towards them, but it doesn't matter how far he runs, how fast. They're just gone. Eddie stands on the edge of the dock at Lover's Lake, but that's not right. Maybe the lake near House in the Woods? No, the Harrington's Lake House? Gareth isn't sure. It's definitely familiar, but it's hard to see, and it's raining. Hard pellets of rain, the kind that hurt and sting his skin. Lightning is crackling across the sky. Dangerous. Wild. Out of control. A warning from above. Eddie isn't heeding the warning, though. Gareth watches as his hair gathers static electricity and stands on end, somehow dry in all this rain. But Gareth knows what that means. He's read about this before. Gareth yells at Eddie. And Eddie doesn't listen, and then there's a crack, and Gareth flinches, closes his eye. When he opens it again, Eddie's not there anymore. Steve's standing in the driveway of Harrington House on crutches, and he won't look at Gareth, won't have anything to do with him. Gareth tries, dances around him, and it's like he's invisible, a non-entity as far as Steve's concerned. Hey, Steve! Steve! Steve finally turns, and Gareth takes a step back from the hatred in his eyes. You know, Steve says, sometimes I wish Eddie never would have met you. That's not... no. He said that once to Steve, but he didn't mean it. He didn't. And now he doesn't want Steve to mean it either. No, no, no. Eddie, come on, don't do this. Eddie's dead. They've hit an oak tree right near the hot box. Gareth can't get out of the car. His door is jammed shut. He has to crawl over Eddie, and he falls to his knees in the open door, and they suddenly ache. He's not sure he can walk, but he tugs Eddie out, and he's so heavy as he drags him over against another tree, away from the vintage Mustang, away from where it's crumpled and mangled, as lifeless as Eddie. He doesn't know what to do. He's all alone. He thought they were alone, as he fucks the woman beneath him on the couch. But now Di is standing there, looking at him, at them, shoving the girls behind her, disgusted. He'd promised. But he couldn't help himself. He can't change. Can't grow up. Once a cheater, always a cheater. Girls, go upstairs to your room. Now. Di says, and they listen, because her voice is hard. She gives him one last look, shakes her head, and turns to follow their girls. Gareth bounces up off the couch, off and out of the other woman, and buttons his jeans as he's running up the staircase after Di. He deserves to be all alone. Di is packing her bags, taking the girls away from him, shielding them behind her like he's a danger. They're little, maybe 5 or 6, crying, Daddy, in their little voices. He reaches for her, for them, and Di pushes him away, and he falls into a hole that's opened up under his feet. Falling, falling, falling. He sees the flames outside of the plane window, feels the impact to his back, and turns to look. Goody and Jeff's row is pushing him as they scream, pushing, 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 until his seat breaks loose and he flies away. Falling, falling, falling. He's fallen as far as he can. Now he's sitting on the ground in the trees, the destroyed fuselage behind him, and he's screaming in the distance. Gareth's crying, holding both of his eyes, but he's blind. He's lost them both. He sits up in bed with a start, breathing hard, fast. He's teetering on that precipice, the one where you were crying in a dream, and now that you're awake, you can either cry for real or not. He does. He lets it wash over him fully. Gareth, you're okay. It was a dream. I'm here. Zai says, reaching for his hand, like she has thousands of times before. He squeezes it. He can see her there in bed beside him, in the darkness. He's not blind. He's 64. Dai is here. Their girls are grown. Eddie is fine, in town. Steve with him. Goody and Jeff have been gone almost 40 years. It never stops. It doesn't let up, not even decades later. They are all vivid in his dreams, still young, still on tour. His girls. Little. But his mind has twisted things, made them worse. He takes stock, inventory. Goody and Jeff are gone, but the plane was never on fire. Eddie hit a tree with his car a long time ago, but lived, and Steve hasn't shut Gareth out. He never cheated again, so Di never left him, never took the girls. He still has one working eye. Eddie is fine. Eddie is fine. He needs to see Eddie, but it's early, before dawn, and doesn't want to wake them up yet. So he waits. Sits in the kitchen until it's 6:30, and he drives over to Harrington House. Hits the button on his sun visor to get in the garage, and the lights are on. Steve is up, moving around the kitchen, making coffee. Sesame seeds making a mess of the counter as he reads the morning paper on his iPad. Gareth knocks once on the kitchen door and lets himself in. "It's just me," Gareth says, and Steve smiles. He isn't surprised to see him coming in from the garage, even this early in the morning. Gareth shows Steve heard the garage door come up. His hearing is bad, but it's not that bad. Gareth still has his own garage door opener, his own parking spot in the garage, where Eddie's car would go, if he had one. Steve reaches out to hand him the other half of the bagel, and Gareth shakes his head no. He's not hungry. He just wants to see Eddie. "He's still in bed, but you can go on up," Steve says, and Gareth takes the stairs. One at a time now, not two. That's how old he's getting these days. He crawls in bed with Eddie, and Eddie opens an eye to see why he's being jostled awake. "You're not as pretty as the fellow that was just here," he teases, and Gareth laughs. Steve is a silver fox, that bastard, and he aged with a grace neither him nor Eddie could have ever managed. He scoots towards Eddie, and Eddie rolls onto his back slowly, with a little less agility than he had as a kid, and opens his arms. Gareth tucks himself into Eddie's side. They are decades too old for this, surely. Gareth has a grandbaby now. They're senior citizens, for God's sake. But it's all they know. "Nightmare?" Eddie asks, squeezing Gareth's shoulder. "Several, I think," Gareth says. "I'm still kicking," Eddie promises, and that's exactly what Gareth needed to see with his own eye, the only one he still got. "Me too," Gareth answers, and falls back asleep. When he wakes up again, he hears Steve and Di laughing downstairs, waiting on them to get their asses in gear. He looks at Eddie. "I'm getting a cataract. I'm scared something will go wrong during surgery and I'll be blind." Eddie had his own cataracts fixed last year, and he's fine. No problems. But Gareth only has the one eye left. He can't afford to fuck it up. It requires consultations and specialists. Do they do it sooner than they do it on a two-eyed patient, or wait even longer than they usually wait? Do they do it like normal, or knock his ass out so there's no chance he'll move during the surgery and blind himself? It's just been overwhelming. He doesn't want to talk about the benefit-to-risk ratio anymore. He just wants to see. "Better take a good long look at me now, then," Eddie teases, not feeding his fear, not giving it any weight. Which is surprising for Eddie. Gareth thought Eddie'd be convinced Gareth would be blinded for sure. Maybe since he's had it done and it went fine, that he's less paranoid about this one specific thing. Gareth closes his eye. Eddie is 29. long dark hair blowing in the wind on the tarmac. Before. Eddie is 18, hair pulled up onto his head out of the way, sewing patches onto his battle vest by hand. Before. Eddie is 14, no hair at all, crouched down making adjustments to Gareth's too big drum kit so he can reach everything just a little easier. Before. Gareth opens his eye. Eddie is 68, long salt and pepper hair, laying right next to him in bed. After. "It'll be fine," Eddie says. "I don't think this is worth worrying too much about, kid." Gareth agrees. He just can't make his subconscious accept that, but he knows, deep down, that most things he worries about never happen anyway. They go downstairs, and Eddie kisses Di on the cheek and Steve on the mouth. He pours them both coffee, handing Gareth a mug. This is his home, his people. He puts the mug down on the counter and wraps his arms around Di's neck in a hug. "Better?" she asks. "Yeah," he assures. They eat breakfast, just talking to each other. Steve's thinking of retiring, for real this time. They'll all believe it when they see it. Steve has been retiring since he was 28 years old, and he's only found more and more work for himself over the years. He might not be managing a bunch of mangy musicians, but he's definitely kept himself busy. They talk about James, the grandson, James Edward. The older he gets, the more obvious it is that he got the curls from Gareth. They've never had a boy before, so this is brand new territory. Gracie keeps calling him Little Eddie as a joke, because he's so wild, and Gareth is pretty sure the name is gonna stick if she isn't careful. Gareth wouldn't be so mad about that, having a second Eddie to love. Steve sticks his fork in another pancake and puts it on Eddie's plate, and Eddie pours syrup on it and cuts into it while they keep talking. When breakfast winds down, Eddie stands up. "You want to play a little?" Gareth does. He always does. Di and Steve top off their coffee mugs and settle into the control booth. Eddie picks up Sweetheart, and Gareth sits down behind his kit. His original kit. From before. They just got it back from being on display in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and decided it should live at Eddie's. That's where he plays the most these days. Eddie had been completely unwilling to even discuss Sweetheart going on display, out of his sight, but did finally allow for a replica of her to be made. Gareth sent his drums, and the moms had no issues handing over a guitar and bass from Jeff and Goody's extensive collections. But Sweetheart? She wasn't going. No way, no how. Gareth understood that. Eddie offered them Hercules, which was a huge concession coming from Eddie, and they declined. So they just made a replica of Sweetheart while Eddie supervised. He made sure she had every worn spot, every blemish, made sure they made it look like the neck had been broken and repaired. She looked great. She wasn't Sweetheart, but she was a great stand-in. "I talked to Nancy Dustin yesterday. This year's applications are really good," Eddie says. And Gareth smiles. "Yeah?" "Yeah," Eddie confirms. "They sent me samples. There's a metal band with a groove." Gareth smiles, wide. They've given out millions of dollars in the past few years in grants to new bands trying to make their first albums. Eddie and Mike have produced a lot of them. Gareth sits in and watches, now that he's retired from the road. When he gets bored, he goes into the house and bugs Steve when he's home. Steve's slowly tying up all his loose ends at Harrington Financial, winding down his long career. But he's dragging his feet and Eddie isn't pushing him. He's told Gareth if Steve wants to work until he dies at 104, Eddie will support that. Steve is a little slower physically, maybe, but his brain is still sharp as a fucking tack. He needs something to do to use that. He can't just sit in the house, he'd go mad. Eddie would drive him fucking crazy. Gareth is sure of it. Eddie is starting to fret about all of their health, like an overprotective mother hen. They want to do another hip revision again, and Steve's just not into it. He's been down that road so many times before, and Gareth doesn't blame him for wanting to say enough's enough. But if he does it, they'll all help him recover. It's what they do. They are all still recovering from the crash in ways. But Steve is just the most obvious. Gareth gets a new prosthetic eye every 10 years or so, and his right knee needed a little tweak after he retired from touring, but none of that compares to having hip surgery every decade or so. Steve's tired of it, and Gareth understands that. Eddie has arthritis where his bones were so broken, and winter is rough. But they're all still here. "Okay, what are we playing?" Eddie asks, pulling Gareth's focus back to him standing there with Sweetheart, ready to go. He shrugs. Eddie can choose. "You pick." "How about Buck Wild?" Eddie suggests, adding, "It's been a while." Gareth smiles. "Yes, it sure has." 2045. Gareth lets himself into Harrington House, and Steve is sitting in his recliner, feet up, reading. "Hey," Gareth says. Steve doesn't look at him. "Steve!" That gets his attention, and he turns up his hearing aid. Gareth waves. "I didn't know you were in here." Steve laughs, and Gareth smiles. Steve's hearing is worse than Gareth's these days. Steve moves to get up, reaching for his cane, and Gareth waves for him to stay put. Steve does, but tells him, "Eddie's already in the studio with Mike." Gareth heads that way. Gareth's 75, Eddie's 79, almost 80. Those 4 years of age difference were a big deal as kids, and then a complete non-issue for the majority of their lives. But now they matter again. Eddie turning 80 is scaring Gareth. He thinks they're all falling apart, slowly but surely. But then he sees Eddie and he's bickering with Mike like they're in their 20s, arms moving, animated like he's not on the downward slope out of his 70s, and it all fades away. Eddie is still Eddie. "Hey, kid," Eddie says when he sees Gareth, and Gareth smiles. "Hey, Eddie, Mike," and he looks between them. "What are we fighting about today?" They both laugh, so it's nothing. Gareth's sure. Just their process of making albums together. Bickering is the norm. He's sure Eddie's being very particular with this one. It's been almost 50 years since the crash, and they started talking about doing one final album of cover songs together last year. The End of the Road. Gareth thinks that's a little morbid, because he can't bear to think of Eddie going anywhere without him. But he knows that at their age, it could be him that goes first. Or Steve. Or die. It's going to happen, sooner rather than later, whether they're ready for it or not. He can't live without any of these people. He doesn't even want to think about it. He's the youngest, and again, just like he did as a kid, he feels that. He didn't know that would be something that would come full circle, but it has. And once again, he doesn't want to be left behind. But if Eddie wants to say this one last thing, if he wants to close this chapter in this way, of course he'll help him. Gareth knows if he was told in advance that it was his last day on Earth, that he'd want to spend part of it playing music with Eddie. It's a country album. Eddie hasn't actually called it that, but it's definitely a country album. Eddie mainly on his acoustic guitar, the tracklist built from lots of country standards with folk influences. Something that started with Wayne, when Eddie was just a little boy. Gareth feels like it's a goodbye. Like Eddie thinks he's Johnny Cash, taking that final bow, knowing he was on the way out of this world. It's no coincidence that Eddie's chosen lots of the same songs Cash covered on those American Recordings albums at the turn of the millennium. They're sentimental, emotional, a chance to look back. But as far as he knows, Eddie isn't sick. Eddie hasn't lost his spouse. Eddie is still here and present, but there's been an urgency to making this recently that Gareth doesn't like. Eddie's pushed them into the studio, and that makes Gareth nervous. Eddie spent months picking songs, waffling around, bouncing ideas off Gareth, playing things together, loving them and putting them in the keep pile, hating them and throwing them out. Hundreds of songs. Gareth doesn't know what Eddie is trying to say, but he figures he'll know by the end. He'll just have to wait and see. It was so slow-moving, Gareth was pretty sure it was never gonna happen before they all died of old age. For real. But then Eddie was suddenly in a rush. Gareth hopes it was just that Eddie had finally picked out what he wanted, and was excited, and ready to lay it all down. But at their age, rushing feels ominous. They don't rush at anything these days. Eddie sits on the stool and picks up Dragon Slayer. His voice is gravelly with age. Seasoned. The emotion is heavy. Too real. Eddie's still fun, but with age as advanced as theirs, there's a weight you can't escape. It takes a toll. Waking up tomorrow isn't a given. Everything hurts. You get stoved up in the car after just riding for half an hour. The leg cramps are fucking brutal. Di gets them so bad she sometimes cries, and he can't do anything to help her. Wait for it to pass and just be there. Life goes too fast. It feels like just yesterday they were on the road together. But it's been 50 years. Gareth is relieved that most of these are sad songs and waltzes, because he doesn't have the speed and agility that he did at 25. Eddie doesn't either. His fingers are gnarled and arthritic after so many decades of playing the guitar. He's still good. Of course, he is. But playing slower suits him better these days. Suits them both better these days. Eddie sings a slow, stripped-down version of I Won't Back Down, and it makes Gareth emotional. It's a little hard to harmonize with him when he's trying not to cry. That's just a different song, coming out of singers their age. Di comes in and sings Better Dig 2, and they have so much fun with it. Steve watches from the booth right next to Mike. Two holes might not be enough, honestly. The gravedigger better just dig 4. That's how close they all still are, and Gareth wouldn't have it any other way. They plan to take a month to record this album, not that they have anywhere else to be these days, but they've blocked off the entire month of June. It's a distraction from the anniversary, undoubtedly, and Eddie's put out the word. They're going to be in the studio all month, if not longer, and anyone that wants to come play is welcome to join them at any time. The girls fly in, bringing the grandkids for an extended summer vacation. It's like everyone wants to see this. Like seeing them play together is unusual. It's definitely not. They've all seen it a million times. Both these girls have good voices, though neither ever pursued music professionally, and that was more than okay with Gareth. It's a hard life to live. He's got a teacher and an accountant, and he couldn't think of anything better. Whatever makes them happy, he's happy. He's positive that Steve had something to do with Lily becoming an accountant. She'd sit on Steve's lap at his desk while he did paperwork for hours, not bored, asking actual questions that he'd answer. Numbers just spoke to her, in the same way music spoke to Gareth. The girls sing together, and Eddie holds his hands over his heart. It's blood harmony, and it can't be replicated. Their voices blend beautifully. Then Gracie sits in and sings a haunting cover of On the Road Again with Eddie, Jonathan playing the piano with them, delicate and soft. Eddie plucked the guitar just as tenderly. It doesn't need drums. Eddie will try to add them, to include them, but he's not going to trample all over this. It's perfect, as is. He watches Gracie sing with Eddie, sitting close. Both his girls love Eddie and Steve so much. They were like a second set of parents just as much as they were uncles. And his girls are nearing 40. Both grown women with families and loves and lives. They will always be his girls. His babies. Gareth remembers when he thought 40 was old, and fuck, it goddamn wasn't. 40 was young when he was 40, and it's really goddamn young now, looking at his girls. Gracie's voice is young and strong, but she's staying soft to not plow over Eddie's old and worn timber. You think you'll escape it, but most don't. Your power goes, your breath, your ability to carry a melody as easily. Just like in childhood, matching bookends. The middle, that's the sweet spot. They are past that now, it's in the rear view, getting smaller and more distant by the day. Eddie phrases differently when he sings now, even more than he did, even just 10 years ago. Back phrasing and forward, laying behind the beat or surging forward past it. It feels honest, not practiced, and it's never the same way twice. It works really well, creates tension, makes you wonder where he's going with the song. It's made things interesting when they play together, that's for damn sure. Gareth just has to play the song, and if Eddie slides off the lead line mid-song, Gareth has to ignore it. He can't listen to Eddie to find the beat, not like he could when they were kids, because Eddie's not following it these days. He's not off time, he's just bending it to his will, playing with it, sliding ahead or behind, but always coming back to center. So, now it's Gareth's turn to be solid and on beat, always trusting that Eddie will come back to him. And sometimes he's so far off that Gareth thinks there's no way in hell he'll pull his shit together and find the beat again by the end of the meter. But he always does. Always. He's Eddie. Just because he's playing around with time doesn't mean he's lost the beat. Gareth knows Eddie knows exactly where it's at, and he's trusting that Gareth will keep it in the pocket for him, not speed up or fall behind along with him, so he can always find it again when he's damn good and ready. Jonathan has explained that it's rubato, and common in romantic period piano pieces. Gareth doesn't know anything about that. He understood it better when Jonathan said it's like Frank Sinatra or Willie Nelson, sliding all around the tempo, stealing time then giving it back. That, Gareth understands. Now, Eddie just needs extra time to breathe, to gather up breaths that aren't as sustained, ones that can't produce all the power Eddie clearly wants. Gareth watches his chest go up, his shoulders, as he's fighting for more. He's breathing with his whole body. Gareth doesn't think he does that, not yet, anyway. He'll have to look in the mirror and sing to find out when he's alone. It worries Gareth that Eddie seems to be struggling. He wonders if Eddie has emphysema, even though he hasn't smoked in 50 years. Eddie leans up to the mic and says, "Chrissy, this is for you." And that's Gareth's cue. He double taps the snare and they're playing "Louisiana Woman, Mississippi Man," and Max steps up to sing with Eddie this time. Gareth thinks it is fucking spooky that this was the song Chrissy would sing with Eddie, and then she died in Louisiana. It feels eerie. She wasn't from Louisiana. She was a Louisiana woman in the end, he supposes. Max sings right next to Eddie, and Eddie looks at her and smiles. They're sitting there, debating what to play next, when the overhead speaker crackles to life, Steve's voice coming through loud and clear. "Freebird!" Eddie turns and flips him off, laughing. "I don't know that I have the dexterity for that these days," Eddie says, but he does. Gareth knows he does. "And what is a single guitar Freebird?" "Shit, that's what." "I'll play," Dustin's son Derek says into the mic over Steve's shoulder. "There. Now you have two," Steve sasses. Eddie nods, allowing it. He goes and gets Sweetheart and hands her over to Derek, and then gets out Jeff's slide guitar. The vintage Red Gibson SG. It's still pretty after all these years, and Eddie starts tuning it and raising the strings up off the frets with a little piece of rod. Derek is watching him closely, so Eddie starts narrating what he's doing. "Use the G string and tune the B string to a G so you have two. But the real secret is the phaser," Eddie says, showing the little orange box. "You set it low as you can get. That's the secret to the sound, the cry." Derek nods and Eddie continues. "You'll hear this a lot once you know the sound of it. Cashmere, the opening riff on Half a Scar. Basically any mid-70s Gilmore can be done on a P90. You can use it to play Bark at the Moon, too." "And you use a glass slide?" Derek asks, and Eddie nods. "Yeah, this one is a vintage Cortisidium bottle. They were popular in the 70s. Dwayne Allman used one. Bonnie Raitt? Gary Rossington, too. I have a whole box of them somewhere, if you want. They make replicas, but you know me, I don't like change." Eddie laughs, and Gareth smirks from behind his kit. If that isn't the goddamn truth. "When I'm gone, you can probably sell them on eBay to other guitar players looking for the real deal," Eddie says, and Gareth wants to reach over and smack him. He's not going anywhere, not anytime soon. Gareth won't allow it. And eBay hasn't existed for years, at least not under that name, not since it was bought out. But it's pretty on brand that Eddie wouldn't know that. It makes Gareth smile. Eddie teaches Derek the trick to the bird chirps, and then Eddie gets everything set up, and Gareth waits until Jonathan kicks them off from behind the piano. This is on his time. Gareth will follow, and then Eddie will come in with the bird chirps. Then that pretty, pretty slide. Derek is good, but he's not Jeff. Not Alan Collins. That's okay. Those are both pretty big shoes to ask anyone to fill. Afterwards, Eddie declares, Okay, second gen only now. And Eddie and him join the rest of the old folks in the booth, while the kids pick up instruments. There are Sinclairs and Wheelers, Byers and Hendersons, Joneses. None of them are professionals, and Gareth prefers that. The road is hard and unforgiving. He loved it, but he hates what it took from him. He doesn't want the kids to suffer the same way. He loves that they love music, but not in a way that can ruin them. They all settle, and there's nobody behind the drums. Where's Lane? Gareth asks. I'm not really second generation, Lane says from behind him somewhere. Gareth turns, seeks him out. You are, Gareth says, and pushes his nephew through the door into the studio. Lane isn't a professional drummer, but he played all through school and still does, just for fun. Gareth doesn't really think he had that much to do with his nephew playing the drums. Lots of kids want to play the drums. But he does think about when he was little and would sit on Gareth's lap to help him play. They argue amongst themselves, trying to decide what to play. It's familiar, that fight, and Gareth smiles. He rests his hands on Di's shoulders. She's sitting at the controls between Mike and Steve. When they start playing, he isn't sure what it is until they get to the lyrics. It's that song about eating pussy that came out when the girls were teens, and Gareth smiles. That was not a conversation he was having. Not back then. It was only about eating watermelon, and that was that. He squeezes Di's shoulders again, and she looks up at him and laughs. He thinks he still has it in him, if she's up for it. They play a whole set of songs that are after Gareth and Eddie's time, but time passes. Music evolves. They get some Harry Styles, some Taylor Swift, a little Ed Sheeran, The Weeknd, Justin Bieber, Post Malone, and Eddie cheers them on like every song they're playing is his absolute favorite, like they've broken out the Ozzy or the Dio instead of Miley Cyrus. And everyone in line in the bathroom, trying to get a line in the bathroom, we all so turned up here. Eddie and Gareth have definitely tried to get a line in the bathroom in their day. A time or two. It's just been a while. Gareth looks at Eddie and remembers him young and coked out, just jabbering as they huddled around a dirty sink, taking turns. Eddie meets his eyes, and Gareth is absolutely certain he's on the same page. It's not like they are gonna go do some lines now. They both have heart attacks for sure. But it's not a bad memory. Not at all. They play that Coldplay song that makes Gareth cry. It gives Barbie a chance to really play the piano. She's her father's daughter for sure. Nobody said it was easy. No one ever said it would be this hard. Oh, take me back to the start. They roll straight from the melancholy back into rocking again. Gracie starts singing, and she's her mother's daughter. It's basically a big fuck you song, and that's definitely Di's kind of jam. Gareth doesn't know it, but it's catchy. And they all sing the chorus together, and Lane comes in on the drums, and it's good. Maybe not Gareth's first choice of music, but hell, he's been around Eddie for over 60 years. His first choice of music has never much mattered, Gareth thinks, and smiles to himself. Grandpa Eddie, Charlie says, excited to see Eddie, and crawls up on Eddie's lap. Gareth's grandkids are Eddie's grandkids, too. Steve and Eddie are just another set of grandparents. Nobody had to ask or offer. It's just the way it was going to be. No question. Hey, kiddo, tell me what you've been up to, Eddie says, actually interested. And Charlie starts in on a long story about the airplane they took to get here, the juice in the little cup that he spilled but didn't mean to, and the luggage carousel. It's a story, all right. But Gareth knows Eddie loves a good story. The kids cook, taking the burden off Steve and I. Harrington House is full of life, of family. It feels like it did a lifetime ago. The intercom cuts in, and they both pause and look towards the booth. Grandpa, Charlie wants to come sing that one with you, Steve says, and Eddie opens his arms. They let him in the studio, and he crawls up on Eddie's lap. Eddie balancing him on a knee behind his guitar so he can reach the mic. "How do you know this song, kiddo? It's almost as old as I am," Eddie teases. Charlie explains it's a video sound on whatever the latest social media is. Eddie won't understand that, but Gareth gets it. Sort of. Maybe. And Charlie says the song makes him feel happy. That Gareth definitely gets. It's a great song for feeling happy. Gareth likes the drums on it, and it makes him feel nostalgic for a time long gone. They start Kodachrome from the top. And it doesn't take long to realize exactly why Steve sent Charlie in. He's got the lyrics wrong, and it's very cute. "I got an iPhone camera. I love to take a photograph." Gareth smiles. He doesn't even know how to explain what film is, let alone Kodachrome. Charlie knows what an iPhone is, and that's how you take photographs. It's illogical, that leap he's made, and Eddie rolls with it, singing the updated lyrics. Nikon does sort of sound like an iPhone in the original recording. Charlie's not wrong. Charlie wants to hear the playback, so they gather together, and when he gets to the part about all the girls he knew when he was single, Dye smarts off. "Just what convention center are you planning on renting to bring them all together for one night?" She snarks, and Gareth grabs her hand and pulls her into him. Not as rough as he would have 50 years ago, but he still pulls her close and laughs in her ear. That opens the floodgates, all the kids wanting their turn in the studio. So Eddie sits on a stool front and center and plays the guitar while the littlest grandkids sit around and he sings with them. He's playing this old man. And Gareth does a little shuffle on the drums where he's supposed to, where the lyrics demand it. And then Eddie plays his harmonica and then picks up that damn ukulele that Gareth hasn't seen him use in decades, not since he broke his collarbone in that damn car wreck. It was silly to see him play it then, and silly to see him play it now. He doesn't imagine this will make it onto the album, but he's glad they are recording it, nonetheless. Gareth hopes the kids will enjoy it when they are old and gray themselves. Remembering how fun Grandpa Eddie was. Still a spry motherfucker at almost 80, switching out instruments just to entertain them. Sometimes they'll record a song and think they have it, then someone new will show up and Eddie will want to include them on it, so they'll do it again. It's fun, but draining in a way making music isn't in your 20s or 30s or, fuck, 50s. 70s is new, different. And he's not sure what the 80s will bring. Eddie's tired today. The house has been filling up all week, and Steve urges Eddie to go lay down just for a little while. "Just take a break, a short nap. 15 or 20 minutes, Steve barters, trying to convince Eddie. "Gareth will go with you. Go recharge yourselves." Gareth wasn't really looking for a nap, but he's not going to argue with Steve, especially not if it will get Eddie to take a break. Eddie reluctantly agrees and heads to the bedroom, now permanently relocated downstairs. Harrington House was built for a young family. Gareth is pretty certain, but there's no way in hell the two of them are going anywhere else. This is their home. The upstairs is mainly for guests now, and that's working just fine. Gareth looks into Steve's office and glances at all of Jeff's tapes that line the walls as decoration. Labels are faded, some even beyond reading now. They are in order, so Gareth can guess what's on each of them. Steve inherited them from Gloria, and he's their keeper now. Jeff's sisters made sure that's where they ended up. They have the digital copies Dustin made, but the originals belonged here. With Eddie. With Steve. He supposes his girls will get them next, and he's not sure they'll want them. A bunch of dead format media isn't exactly the best use of space. But they can toss them if they want, after he's gone. Nothing lasts forever, and he's tried to make peace with that. He's really deeply struggled with the fact that the clock is ticking on those of them that remember Goody, Jeff, and the others. Those of them that remember the original band. That one day, in the not-so-distant future, that they'll all be gone. It will be forgotten to time. His girls have seen footage, can identify everyone, but they didn't know them. And he knows they don't mean the same thing to them. And that's okay. But one day he's going to wake up dead, and Goody and Jeff won't have anyone left here that truly loved them. And that's a fucking bitter pill. He and Eddie They've gotten all these extra decades. The girls love and know them. The grandkids, too. 50 years from now, the grandkids will be able to say, "Do you remember when Grandpa Gareth and Grandpa Eddie made that album?" And they will remember. They'll remember being here. They'll remember Eddie singing to them, just as Gareth remembers being on the road. It might be fuzzy in places, but it really happened. To him, all around him. "What are you doing?" Eddie asks, stopping next to him. "Just looking," Gareth says, and then follows Eddie to bed and lays down next to him. "Turn on that heat," Gareth says, and Eddie laughs. "Oh, now you like our heated bed." "Well, I'm 75 now, not 45. Gareth didn't think he was tired, didn't think he needed a nap, but as soon as he's down, he dozes off. "Tell Eddie to hurry the fuck up, we're waiting," Goody snaps, and Gareth looks around, trying to figure out where they are. Then it comes into focus, and it's the hot box. "What?" Gareth asks.
"What?"
Goody mocks. "What are you even doing here? We called for Eddie, not you." Gareth is confused. He thought he was sure. He's dreaming. That's what this is, he finally realizes. He tries to figure out when they are. He doesn't remember this, at least not yet. Maybe it's not a memory at all, just a dream. Goody is tuning his bass, Jeff his guitar. Sweetheart is on a stand, but there aren't any drums. "Where are my drums?" Gareth asks, and Goody just looks at him. Gareth looks down at himself, and he's young, but he still has the tattoo on his arm. These two things don't go together. He turns his arm slowly, really looking at it. It's been a while since it looks so bright and smooth. "Well, there he is, fucking finally," Goody says, and Jeff laughs. Gareth turns, and there's Eddie, scurrying through the doorway, bowing dramatically, making his excuses for running late. He's so young. It's been a long time since he's seen Eddie that young, that vividly. "Where are my drums?" Gareth asks again. "This is just guitar practice," Jeff says. "We don't need you. Not yet." "Okay," Gareth says. "Well, can I stay and watch?"
"No."
Goody laughs, and Gareth watches as Eddie puts on Sweetheart. "Ignore him. You can do anything you want, kid," Eddie says, smiling at him. He's so young. Goody counts them in, and Gareth doesn't recognize this song. It's not Corroded Coffin. If it is, it's something new they're working on without him. Jeff sings.
"There's a rock and roll heaven."
And Gareth doesn't like this. In fact, he hates it, but it continues.
"Well, you know they've got a hell of a band, band, band."
They all seem to know it, but he doesn't. "Guys, why are you playing this?" They ignore him. Gareth jerks awake, and Eddie is still asleep. Gareth makes sure he's still breathing, and he is, so Gareth lays back and takes a deep breath and just waits for Eddie to wake up. They can't have him. Not yet. He looks at the wall, and there's his check from their bet over 50 years ago. It's faded, nearly illegible at this point, but they all know what it is, what it means. Steve Harrington was it. Eddie was right. When Eddie stirs, Gareth reaches down and takes his hand. Eddie squeezes it, his grip still strong. "Do you know a song about rock and roll heaven?" Gareth asks. "What?" Eddie laughs, voice scratching, clearly barely awake. "You don't believe in rock and roll heaven?" He doesn't, but that was fucking weird. Eddie hums the tune, then sings a few bars, and yes, that's the song he heard them playing. "Yes, that," Gareth says. "What is that?" "It's the Righteous Brothers," Eddie says. "You know it. There's two versions. Different dead musicians." Gareth shakes his head. He doesn't think he does. But he must, though, somewhere, buried deep in his brain. "I had a dream. They were waiting on you, and I wasn't invited." Eddie laughs. "It's just a dream. You know I'm not going anywhere you're not invited." "I know, it just felt weird. You know those dreams that feel too real? It was like that." Well, if it was real, then you're going to have to wait a little longer, I promise. They've waited 50 years, Gareth says, and Eddie closes his eyes again. Yeah, Eddie says quietly. Gareth doesn't think Eddie believes in rock and roll heaven any more than he does, but the older they get, the more he can tell Eddie wants to. Sometimes Eddie talks about them like he'll see them again, and Gareth never says anything to the contrary. Who's he to say what's right, what's wrong? He doesn't fucking know what happens after. Hell, maybe they are here to get me, Eddie says. Are you okay? Gareth asks. I'm worried that I'm losing my memory, Eddie says, and Gareth panics. All the worst-case scenarios flood his whole body. Eddie has Alzheimer's. Eddie has dementia. Eddie is dying. But finally he remembers that Eddie has become a bit of a hypochondriac these days. If there were any actual concerns, Steve would have already spoken to him. Gareth knows that. Why do you think so? I haven't noticed anything weird, I promise. Sometimes it's like I've forgotten what they really look like. Or sound like, Eddie asks quietly. That's normal, I think, Gareth assumes. It's been 50 years. They have pictures and so much video footage, but the three-dimensionality of them has faded, and it's hard to get a real feel from them anymore. And it fucking sucks. Before, he could have told you what Jeff's aftershave smelled like, or Goody's leather jacket. But that's long gone. He pulls them up in his mind, but it's dulled with time and distance. 50 years is a long time, no matter if it feels like it's gone by in the blink of an eye. I can't remember as much as I used to. Eddie, it's been over 50 years. I can't remember it all either. But we'll get you looked at, just to make sure. Okay, I think a cognitive test is a good idea. Gareth tries not to smile. If he's asking for a cognitive test, he probably doesn't need a cognitive test. They'll get him one anyway, to ease his mind. We'll do that, and if there's anything to worry about, we'll take it on together. I know we will, Eddie admits. And then Di and I will move in, and Steve will be thrilled, Gareth teases. Eddie laughs, which was the point, but it's no joke. Gareth promised long ago that if help was needed, they'd do it together. It was more about Steve's mobility when it was schemed up. But he'd do it for this, too. He'd do anything for Eddie. They try not to feed into Eddie's overabundance of fear about being sick, about dying, but they don't brush it off either. Gareth thinks it's more that Eddie's been so worried about Steve's body failing him, and that's too big to worry about, too scary. So Eddie finds new things to worry about for himself, real or imagined. Gareth knows it's not for attention. Eddie gets all the attention he could ever want. He's just scared he's going to lose his love. The only one he's ever known. Gareth knows exactly how that feels. He spent more than 2/3 of his life with Di. Being without her, he doesn't want to even think about that. I wish we had a cat, Eddie says out of the blue. Maybe he is losing his mind. Eddie has never, not once, mentioned wanting a cat. Or a dog, for that matter. A cat, Gareth repeats, hoping he'll elaborate. A cat. Eddie confirms. Maybe a black one, but I'm not picky. Then get a cat. We can't, Eddie says. You can't get a cat because you think you're too old? That's bullshit. Adopt an old cat. They need homes worse than young ones. I know, but with Steve. Gareth doesn't know what he's talking about. Steve loved the girl's cat, Garfield, that they had all through their childhoods. Garfield would always sit on Steve's lap when they came over. Steve loved Garfield. I know, but they're a tripping hazard, and he could never afford to fall, so no cat. Steve's not made of glass. He's managed just fine for the last 50 years. Steve told you you couldn't have a cat? Eddie looks over at him like he's stupid. Of course not. I never mentioned the idea of a cat. Then get a cat. Steve can maneuver. You know he can. Get an adult cat. One that doesn't get under feet. They exist. We're not getting a cat. I'm too old to take care of a cat now. But sometimes, I wish we had a cat. Gareth supposes Di and him could get another cat, letting Eddie be cat adjacent. They shared their kids, their grandkids. They can share a cat. Do not get a cat, Eddie tells him, and Gareth laughs. You stop reading my mind, Gareth says, pulling Eddie's hand up closer to his face so he can look at it. His skin is thinner, with blemishes from little bumps and bruises. Nobody warns you that your skin will get so thin that a stiff breeze will tear it open after a certain age. Don't get a cat. I appreciate the offer. I didn't offer, Gareth interrupts. You just knew what I was thinking, like an asshole. Eddie laughs again, and it's one of Gareth's favorite sounds. You're fine, Gareth says, because that's the only option. Then he closes his eyes and thinks, You can't have him, Goody. Try again in 50 more years. Then he laughs. What? Eddie asks, smiling at him. I just told Goody to check back in 50 more years, and then maybe we'll discuss it. Eddie laughs. Thanks for making deals on my behalf. It's awfully nice of you to give Steve a break. Shit, Steve would have driven a harder bargain than that, Gareth teases. 50 more years? They got off easy. Are you sure you aren't losing your mind, too? Eddie asks. We could do it together. What do you mean? Gareth asks, looking over at him. You're not wearing your eye. No shit? Gareth asks, reaching his hand up. He didn't realize. Has he not looked in a mirror today? He puts his hand over his eyes in a makeshift patch. Sorry, I guess I forgot. Eddie takes his hand and pulls it away from his face. You know it looks fine to me. Gareth smiles. Thanks. Everyone else must wonder what the fuck I'm doing today, though. He laughs. He's comfortable not wearing it around Di, the girls, Eddie and Steve. But if there's company, he still wears his fancy eye. I don't think they care, Eddie says. Be comfortable. It is more comfortable this way. Should have realized I was an eyeless heathen. I think you're a godless heathen. Your eye has very little to do with it, Eddie says, and they both laugh together until they're both coughing. Fucking old age. Gareth turns to look at Eddie, and Eddie smiles. Gareth, you've been a good man to ride the river with, Eddie says, and Gareth nearly loses it, nearly starts crying at the thought. That's... You too, Eddie. That's all I've ever wanted to be. A good man to ride the river with. Gareth says, and he squeezes Eddie's hand. Thanks for picking me to be your trusted companion to forge the raging waters. Would do it again and again, Eddie says, and Gareth leans closer to him, kissing Eddie on the forehead. They get back in the studio, and Eddie picks Whiskey River. Gareth laughs as he beats on drums for the hammering, hard plucking opening. He loves that hard start, the build-up. Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let his memory torture me. Eddie's changed the lyrics from her to him, and Gareth gets it. But he thinks if Eddie's picked this, that means he's still full of piss and vinegar. So Gareth relaxes a little. He loves to hear Eddie play the guitar on this one, but he's modified the way he's singing it. He's not dragging out all the syllables on dry. And it gives Gareth a pause. He's heard Eddie sing this song 1,000,000,000 times with Wayne. Eddie always sings it like Willie did live, rocking and fast with stretched out breathless run. Today, he's not even trying it. He's singing it straight. His memory might be fine, but his breathing is not. That night after they finished up for the day, Di drives them home and Gareth turns to look at her. You let me leave the house with no eye, he accuses, pointing at her, laughing. You'll go over there all the time without it, she says, defending herself. Well, not when company is going to be there. She cuts him a look. In what world are any of those people company? They're family. They are. He knows that. So he lets it go. They all know he's missing an eye. It's not brand new information. Eddie scared me today. He told me he thought he's having memory problems. Oh, that's not... I haven't noticed anything, Di says, concerned. I think he's fine, just being Eddie. She relaxes, shoulders falling back into place. I really think he could benefit from an anti-anxiety medication. Gareth nods, but Eddie is uninterested. Eddie says he worries he won't be worried if there's something to worry about. Unfortunately, Gareth understood exactly what he meant. He fought it too, but it really got him through some rough patches. "Did you talk to Steve about it?" Di asks. "Not yet. Eddie was always around, but I will as soon as I can catch him alone." "I don't think it's nothing to get too worried about. Steve would notice, and then he'd tell you. And he couldn't hide that from Steve for long. You know it." Gareth nods, but he knows a long, long time ago they hid their heroin use from Steve for a while and got away with it. Maybe Eddie could hide this from them now, too. He makes a non-committal noise. Di can read his mind. "You two in your 20s hiding your heroin addictions isn't the same. You could blame that on other drugs, alcohol, the road. But now, if Eddie's mind was going, we'd all know before he would. Trust me." Gareth hums in agreement, hoping that's true. It feels true, anyway. "I'm worried about his breathing while he's singing," Gareth says softly, like he's scared to actually say it out loud. "Me too," Di answers, and Gareth nearly falls apart. "It's real. It's not just in his head." Di noticed it too. "He doesn't want to talk about it anymore, not right now. He can't." "And he wanted a cat," Gareth says, changing the subject. "I know," she says, "but didn't get one because Steve might fall." "How'd you know that?" "I didn't know that." "You never notice that Eddie's always clearing the floor? They've never had clutter on the stairs or the floors. Look at their house, then look at ours." "We had kids," he argues. "Grandkids." "They have grandkids," Di says, cutting him a look. "That's not what he meant. Of course they do." "That's not what I meant. You know that." She nods, then continues. "But you'd never catch a box just sitting around for a few days because nobody wants to break it down and take it to recycling. Or shoes on the floor. No rugs. Anything on the floor. Look at their house tomorrow, Gareth. Really look. You'll see." Gareth had never noticed, or if he had, he hadn't put it together. Eddie and Steve have had a cleaning service the last few years, but nothing has seemed odd, so that just might be how it has always been. "He was always clearing the floor," Gareth says softly. "He was. You don't remember him following the girls around, picking up toys?" Gareth thinks about it. I guess I assumed he was doing it because Steve liked the house clean. You know Steve." "I do, but I also lived with him while you two were in rehab. All the constant tidying? That was Eddie." "But he was on crutches." "Not the end," she argues. "Huh. Who would have imagined Eddie Munson would be the neat one? You should have seen his bedroom as a teen. Floor to ceiling, piled high. Swear to God. You'd have had to sift through all his shit to find anything in that room." "He adapted. We all did, in ways. I don't even know if he knew what he was doing." It's quiet for a minute. "I had a dream about Goody and Jeff during our nap. They were coming to take Eddie, I think." "It was just a dream. You've been worrying about him turning 80. It's just your subconscious building off that fear." "I know," Gareth says softly, then looks at her. "But I'm still not ready for that." "Of course you're not, but he's fine." "He's fine. He is." That night, Gareth lays in bed, looking up at the ceiling. "Go to sleep. Goody shows up in your dreams tonight, tell him to pound sand," Di says, trying to get comfortable on her side of the bed. Gareth laughs. "Okay, I will. I'll tell him you said so," he teases. "Do it. Tell him. I'll personally let him know when he's needed to usher either one of you into the great beyond," Di says, yawning. "Do you actually think that's a thing?" he asks, turning to look in her direction. "I don't know," she says, "but I promise you, if there is, you'll be wherever Eddie ends up." "Oh no, I don't want to go to hell," he teases dryly, and she laughs. She leans over to kiss him goodnight. "I love you. Go to sleep, and I'll see you in the morning." He nods and closes his eyes. Gareth wakes up, strapped into his airplane seat. He fights against it, but he can't get the seatbelt undone, and he's all alone. He screams for help, for Eddie, for Steve, until a door into a motel room suddenly opens right there in the woods. "What the fuck are you two dickheads doing?" Steve screams, and Gareth barely turns to look at him. He's busy painting the wallpaper. It's an ugly orange and green floral pattern that looks horribly dated, even for a dirt-cheap motel room. Eddie has a thing about orange and green, Gareth says, his paintbrush going back and forth against the wall of the dingy motel room. It's streaky. He thought black paint would cover better than this, so he sweeps the brush back and forth, back and forth. That's not even how you paint a wall! Steve screams at them. Looks like it's getting painted to me, Gareth says, slapping more black paint on the wall in uneven strokes. Do you even know how much this is going to cost? Steve snaps, putting his hands on his hips. Gareth looks around now that Steve mentions it. This is the stupidest thing they've done yet. By far. They both just shrug. What are you on? Steve yells. Because it must be drugs. There's no other excuse. He's not wrong. Little coke? Gareth says. That's all. That's all? That's all? Where are Jeff and Goody? They're doing this in another room, so help me God. They went to the bar. They didn't want to go to Sheeran Williams with us, Eddie says. Steve looks like he's considering calling that store and asking why in the fuck they'd sell 2 gallons of black paint to them. I had to know it wouldn't be used on the up and up. Gareth is sure of that. This is probably thousands of dollars in damage. Easily. Maybe criminal charges. Oh well. You two dickheads are explaining this to the hotel staff. I don't have the words to even try. Steve says, slamming the door as he goes. Uh-oh, Mom's mad. Gareth says, watching as Eddie climbs up on a dresser to paint the ceiling. Gareth wakes with a start and he's laughing. Have you finally gone around the bend? Di mumbles from the pillow next to him. Gareth just laughs harder. No. Waking up laughing is better than waking up crying, that's for damn sure. I was dreaming about the motel in Fresno. That you painted black? Gareth giggles harder. Yes, that one. Poor Steve, she says, but smiles in Gareth's direction. I'd almost forgotten that, he says. I think my dream made it worse than it actually was, though. I'm sure Steve hasn't forgotten. You should remind him today, Di says, stirring the pot. At least that was a fun dream. Not all of them are. Been 50 years today. They have a full house on the 13th, and it's a Tuesday again. Some people are superstitious about Friday the 13th, but it's Tuesday the 13th that Gareth dreads. But it's easier today. The booth is packed, the studio full, and Gareth feels like this is exactly where they're supposed to be today. All together, having fun playing music. They play Every Day is a Winding Road as a warm-up. Eddie picks something of Sheryl Crow's ever so often, and Gareth knows it's for Goody. Eddie hasn't forgotten them, despite what he thinks right now. Gareth bangs on the bongos with his hands, and Max sings lead, and it's fucking fun. When they break for lunch, Gareth is standing in the kitchen, eating a sandwich while beside him. Steve is cutting himself a bagel. Do you remember Fresno? And Eddie barks out a laugh from the counter, where he's eating his own sandwich. So you're choosing violence today of all days, Steve says, but he turns to smile at Gareth. I dreamed about it last night, Gareth says. I think it's a little exaggerated. My mind remembered Eddie painting the ceiling. Steve says he did, at the same time Eddie speaks. Oh, I did. Eddie talks over him. You made such a mess, Gareth says, looking over at Eddie. I made a mess? Just me? That ain't the way I remember it. I'm pretty sure I had a little help. You weren't just along for the ride. You painted a few strokes yourself, Eddie insists. It was your idea, Gareth argues. Was it, though? Eddie asks, smirking. Yes, Gareth shouts. I'm sure there's more than enough blame to go around, Di says, making herself a sandwich. For sure, Steve says. You always were double trouble, you two dickheads. Di laughs. No, trust me. What Eddie wouldn't do, Gareth would and vice versa, Steve says. It was like having twin tornadoes. Oh, I know nothing about that, Di says, and both the girls yell, Hey! In unison from the other room. At least their hearing is better than his was at their age, Gareth guesses. Steve continues. That was the last straw with the property damage. It was bullshit. I took video of it with Jess's camera in case our asses were sued. but I don't think I've ever seen the footage since we never needed it. Steve adds. I have, Dustin shouts from the other room. I have it, if you want to see it. I'm not sure I'm ready, even now, Steve says dryly. I want to see it if Eddie does, Gareth says. If Eddie's not in a place to watch old home videos today, he's not going to push it. Hell yeah, let's see this. Eddie agrees, though, and Gareth smiles. Dustin syncs his phone up to the TV and opens an app. There it all is. Digitized, cataloged. It's so detailed. He's watched it all, Gareth supposes, because everything is tagged with keywords and searchable. So even if they don't remember when something happened, if they know enough about what was in the video, Dustin can probably find it. It's smart. He's always been so fucking smart. Dustin types in black paint motel room, and there it is. He adds Fresno to the keyword since Dustin now knows where it was, and then he clicks on it, and it pops onto the screen, just like magic. It's fuzzy compared to modern videos, but it's been remastered to look pretty damn good for its age. I never knew what the hell this crazy shit was, Dustin says, and Gareth can see why. There's nobody in the room, just footage of a motel room half-painted black, ceiling included. Oh my god, Ty says. She's never seen it either, Gareth is sure. Right? It's worse than I remembered. Your dream wasn't too far off. Cocaine is a hell of a drug. Gareth laughs, and everybody laughs with him. He looks closer. I don't know how we paid for it. We definitely didn't have paint-the-ceiling black money. Not back then, Gareth says. Steve takes a bite of his bagel. Steve paid for it, Eddie says. Gareth turns to look at him. You did? Well, it was that or they were both having you arrested for vandalism, Steve says. How much do I owe you? Gareth asks. With 55 years of interest, you don't even want to know, Steve says, smiling at him. Gareth just laughs. I negotiated the price down. They were able to yank the wallpaper down, but that ceiling, that was the sticking point, Steve says. Sorry, Steve, Gareth says. Yeah, sorry, sweetheart, Eddie adds. You don't sound too sorry, Steve teases, and Eddie grins at him wide and happy. And then everyone in the room calls out memories, footage they know exists, or at least that they hope exists, and Dustin puts everything on the screen. The grandkids eventually get bored and scattered, but the adults stay, watching. Dustin hasn't edited them into squeaky, clean, unrecognizable versions of themselves. There's drugs, there's fighting, plenty of booze. And Gareth, with girls. Nameless, basically faceless, girls that aren't Di. Gareth is strung out on the screen. He can't believe he looked like that and was successfully hiding anything from anyone. He feels like he looks like death. He's higher than shit and there's a girl on his lap. He wishes his girls weren't seeing this, but they know. They know the whole truth. Once they were old enough to know. There were questions, accusations. Two teens questioning if their whole lives were a lie. If their dad, who was gone most of every week, was still cheating on their mom. What year is this? Lily asks. 94? Dustin says. You look awful, Dad. Lily says. And she's not wrong. He catches Gracie wiping out her eyes. There's footage on the road as 1994 ends and 1995 starts. The change in his appearance is obvious. After you got clean? Lily verifies. Gareth nods. You look so much better. She's not wrong about that either. Eddie quietly asks for the last footage, and Dustin rolls it. The tape from the plane wasn't in perfect condition. There are skips and damaged frames, but it is the very last footage of their friends. Their band. Their family. The last time they were all together, without this horrible thing hanging over their heads. Before it all went to pot. Benny making lunch, unpacking sacks and boxes, turning to smile. Billy flipping the camera off, harassing everyone. Chrissy smiling and waving with both hands. Barb leaning her head against Nancy's. Pat and Freddie, heads together, talking music. Lucas and Erica trading barbs. Goody reaching up to put his hand over the lens, laughing. Jeff's voice, laughing with him, but nowhere to be seen. Steve asleep on the floor, Eddie picking out a soft melody on Dragon Slayer, feet up on the coffee table, protecting him. Gareth sees himself drumming his fingers on the poker table, his wallet already gone. They've never shown any of it to the public. They decided to keep quiet, keep it out of the documentary. It was hard. There's no actual crash footage, or if there was, Dustin has squirreled it away. It took years, decades, before they were ready to watch any of the footage from that day, Eddie and him. Eddie cries, and Gareth scoots closer to him on the couch and leans his head against Eddie's and cries with him. Steve and Eddie have gone off together. Eddie's been stripped raw today. Steve's the only one that has ever been great at soothing the edges of that kind of hurt for Eddie. So Gareth sits outside on the glider, rocking gently. Gracie comes out and stops the movement with his foot so she can sit down. She curls into his side, and he rests his head on hers. "I didn't like seeing you look like that," she admits. He kisses her on the head. "I know, it's ugly. I guess I just didn't realize you guys didn't get clean together back then." "No, Eddie went first. He was the brave one," Gareth says. "It took me longer to be ready. Second time, the relapse, we did at the same time. That's why we have the same amount of sobriety. But Eddie has more total, if we're keeping score." "We're not," she says, and he laughs. "Can I ask you a question?" she asks. "Anything," he says, and he means that. "Anything she wants to know, he'll tell her." "Did you ever cheat on Mom on the road?" "As a kid?" "Yes, you know that." "After we got married?" "No, never." She nods. "I just kind of thought maybe you guys lied to, like, protect us when we were teens or whatever. Like, maybe that's why you didn't have kids for so long, because you were still wild." It hurts that she's questioned this for over 20 years without just asking him. "No, no lies. Your mom took a leap of goddamn faith coming to me after the crash. She took a risk, a big one, I'd say. Trusting me again? I don't think I could have survived the shame of disappointing her. Not a second time." "Oh. We waited because my mental health was tenuous at best those first 10 years. The crash did a number on me. The drugs did too. I wasn't ready." She looks like she's gonna say something else, but Di pokes her head out of the sliding glass door. "Eddie's back in the studio." Gareth nods and stops rocking so they can get up. He waits for Gracie to go ahead of him, and she pauses. "Hey, old man," she says, and he grins at her. "You've been the best dad a girl could ask for." "How embarrassing for you," he teases. "You're a sentimental fool," he teases, pulling her towards his chest. "If she's sentimental, she got it from him, undoubtedly." She laughs and hugs him. "I love you, Gracie girl." Steve sits behind the piano, Eddie next to him. They've run the mic over to him, and Gareth is in the booth with everyone else. This one is just the two of them. Steve playing the piano simply, doesn't need anything more. And he has turned his body on the piano bench, angled towards Steve, singing to him. Gareth didn't know if Eddie would do his Bob Dylan impression and go funny. He didn't. It's honest, full of love. Gareth pulls Di under his arm and holds her close while Eddie sings. "I'd go hungry, I'd go black and blue. I'd go crawling down the avenue. No, there's nothing that I wouldn't do to make you feel my love." Gareth doesn't mean to, but he starts crying again. But he's not alone. They've all had front row seats to this enduring love. Over half a century, Gareth thinks Eddie loves Steve more today than he did that first year on the road, when he was driving them all insane with it. Eddie was right. Steve Harrington was it for him. At 24, at 80, always. Eddie better go first. He won't survive losing Steve. Gareth is sure of it. He'll die of a broken heart. Gareth and Steve have had contingency plans for if one of them dies first for years now, on how they'll try to keep Eddie upright and going. Gareth thinks Eddie could probably rebound from losing him, but Steve? He's not so sure. Long, long ago, Gareth promised Eddie that he could go first, and now he hates that idea, 50 years later. But he knows, if that happens, he'll carry that burden for Eddie. He doesn't want to, not at all. He's terrified of that day. But he's more terrified of how Eddie would be as the last man standing, because he doesn't think it'd be good. Gareth thinks he and Steve would be better able to handle being left behind, though neither would wish for it. Not ever. Gareth finally catches Steve alone. Hey, heads up. Eddie is worried about his memory. Have you noticed anything being off? Steve looks confused, then worried. No. Is he off to you? No, not at all, Gareth assures, reaching out to grasp Steve's shoulder, and he's relieved, because Steve would know. They're together all day, every day. But he's worried, so let's get him looked at, to ease his mind. Steve nods, clearly thinking, trying to connect any dots. Did he say what he's struggling with? Steve finally asks, remembering everything about them. Oh, that's normal, right? Steve asks, and Gareth sure thinks so. If not, they're all in trouble. That's what I said. It's been 50 years. It's hard enough to remember 50 years ago without being former rock and rollers and addicts, Gareth says with a small smile. Scrambled what little brains we had decades ago. Steve smiles at him fondly. They've been in this thing together, loving Eddie, for over 50 years. In different ways, sure, but Eddie is still the common center that they both orbit together. I think the fact that he's worried and we're not is the best-case scenario. If we were worried and he wasn't, that's when I'd think something was wrong, Steve says. That's what I said, and we all know damn good and well he's become a little bit of a hypochondriac. Tell me about it, Steve laughs. He was sure he had gout last month, but his foot was just sore because he dropped a shampoo on it in the shower. Which he did not forget he did, by the way, Steve says, exasperated, but clearly still in love with the idiot. He just neglected to share that with me until we were at the doctor's office, and they thought it looked bruised instead of inflamed. Gareth laughs. Eddie doesn't think horses, he thinks zebras. Gareth doesn't know what brought it on. Eddie is so rarely sick that he doesn't understand the hyperfixation. But they make sure he's okay, each time. Because they aren't going to blow him off and have it be the time something actually is wrong. He asked for a cognitive test by name, by the way, Gareth adds. Steve rolls his eyes, but it's full of affection. Okay, I'll get one scheduled. It's a good thing we have money. I'm sure our doctor loves seeing his name on the schedule. Easy entertaining hour. Gareth smiles. Steve is reliant on his hearing aid now, and Steve needs a cane most days from his chronic hip pain. But Eddie is the one that is always at the doctor's office. Makes sense. Gareth waffles, isn't sure if he should say anything, but finally decides to go ahead. Is he worried about having breathing problems? Gareth asks. Nothing's mentioned, Steve says. Why? Watch him sing. He's using his whole body to get a breath. He's struggling with the harmonica. I don't notice it when he's talking, but just look. Watch. That I'm actually concerned about. I sang in the mirror last night. I'm not doing that. I'm nearly as old. What if he has emphysema, or COPD, or lung cancer? He used to smoke. Steve takes him by both shoulders. You're spiraling. He's okay, but I'll look, okay? I'll look and I'll have the doctor look the next time we're there for Eddie's newest hangnail. Steve smiles and Gareth smiles back. And now he feels better that he's at least told Steve that he's concerned. Gareth is waiting for his cue. He knows he doesn't come in for a while on this one. And he has his sticks folded in his lap, listening to Eddie pluck at his guitar, singing slowly, softly.
I could only fly. If I could only fly. I bid this place goodbye. To come and be with you.
Gareth stands abruptly. It's knee-jerk. He didn't mean to, and he catches his knee on his hi-hat and knocks it over, making an awful sound. Everyone turns to look at him, to see what the fuck is happening. He freezes, for a second. His girls are opening the door to the studio, clearly concerned, before he's even taken a step. Get Mom! Lily snaps at Gracie, and he waves his hands, waving them off. He's fine. He's not really. But he's not having a medical emergency or anything. Just a mental one. He leaves the studio, hurries through the house, and goes straight up the stairs to hide in the old master bathroom. It just hit him, terribly sharply between the ribs, that Eddie is trying to leave him. This whole fucking project is a long goodbye, and he can't take it. He cries, hanging onto the edge of the sink. He's cried easy his whole life, and it only got more frequent after the crash. And now, in old age, it's somehow worse than ever before. He tries to pull his shit together. It's fucking embarrassing. Then there's knocking on the door. It's me, Eddie says, and Gareth didn't think he'd follow him up here. He expected the girls. Or die. Gareth doesn't want him to see him like this, but he flips the lock open. What happened? Are you okay? Eddie asks, getting close, looking him over. Are you having a stroke? Gareth laughs. Maybe, not really. I'm fine. You don't look fine, Eddie says. Talk to me, kid. You can't leave me, Gareth says, and Eddie hugs him. I'm not leaving you. What do you mean? Eddie asks. You're saying goodbye with all these songs? All of them. But that one just extra hurt. It's definitely a theme. We're fucking old, kid. Of course we're on the way out. But I'm not planning to go anywhere anytime soon. Okay? Gareth nods, still apprehensive. Let's go do something fun. Forget the studio today, Eddie says. And Gareth has no idea what the fuck could they possibly do for fun. They're old as shit. Okay, but let's finish that song first, Gareth says, and Eddie nods. When they get back down there, Eddie shoos everyone out of the studio in the control room, leaving just the two of them. Eddie set it up to record by himself, and then pulls his stool as close to the drums as he can get, looking right at Gareth.
I feel so good, and then I feel so bad. I wonder what I ought to do.
Gareth is thankful he's got a small job on this one, and he comes in when he's supposed to, sings when he's supposed to, but he's able to look right at Eddie the whole time.
If we could only fly, there'd be no more lonely nights.
It's just the two of them. Always. They close up the studio. They're done for the day. The mood has shifted too far to come back from. Gareth knows it's his fault, but it was just too much. They stand around at the kitchen in Harrington House, trying to decide what to do next. You want to take the kids mini-golfing? Eddie asks, and there's a chorus of dissenters. It's too hot, Steve says, and Gareth knows that'll be the end of that. If Steve says no, the answer's no. The movies? Eddie offers. You'll have to pee 10 times before the preview starts. Steve banters, and Eddie flips him off like he's 28, not nearly 80. Steve just laughs. Then what do you suggest, smart guy? Eddie asks, turning this over to Steve. We could all go out and pull weeds for my garden, Steve suggests, and Gareth laughs. He's not serious. Steve hasn't had a full garden in a few years. At least nothing that would require that kind of attention. Yeah, that'll be fun for them, Eddie says dryly, but smiling at Steve. He can't help himself. Fishing, Steve says. Let's go fishing. Damn, the torpedoes is still running great, Gareth offers, and they all start buzzing amongst themselves. Fishing. We'll have to stop and get fishing licenses, and maybe some more life jackets, but that's easy enough. We'll speed ahead then, Eddie says. He might not want to fish, but he'll relax on the boat. Today, Eddie is lollygagging, so Gareth is just playing by himself, drumming and singing to Di as she sits in the booth, mainly just teasing her. He sticks with the country theme of the month and plays Ladies Love Outlaws, and changes some of the lyrics to fit Di, some of them to fit Eddie and Steve. He's just having fun, being goofy. She laughs, and it makes him smile.
Di like Tom Petty, an old-fashioned in her hand. Gareth had a reputation as a ladies' man. Late one night, a light of love finally gave a bite. Di invited him up and made it last all night.
He plays, she listens, and it's just them in the studio for a long time.
Steve was a gentleman, smart and built to count cash. Eddie was no good guitar picker, sitting on his ass. Steve heard all of his songs tell nothing but bad news, but made his mind up to try to love him, win or lose.
Di laughs and laughs, and Gareth loves it. The lyrics are terrible, he's doing them on the fly, but it's great to see her react like that. Eddie finally rolls in. Nice of you to finally join me, Gareth says, and Eddie just laughs. Good things come to those who wait, Eddie says, and Gareth smiles. Eddie picks up his notes, looking to see what they have left. It's not much. This is winding down. It makes Gareth sad, but it's not like he can't come over and play with Eddie any damn time he wants to, album or not. It still feels final. Like this is the last real music they'll ever make together. That's silly. Everything they've ever played together is real music. It makes no difference if the tapes were rolling or not. Okay, Eddie finally asks. It's hard to be humble? Yes, that sounds great to Gareth. It's funny, not sad, and that is easier to swallow. When Gareth comes out of the studio later, Jonathan and Argyle are on the couch, talking to each other quietly, laughing, looking a little lit. In his mind, he can see them clearly in their 20s, not their 70s. Gareth smiles. Some things never change. Having a best friend for most of your life is a fucking gift. He has that with Eddie. Argyle and Jonathan have that, and Steve with Robin. And she should be here later today, Gareth thinks. He was pretty sure she was coming in today anyway. Steve is asleep in his chair, probably a little stoned himself by the looks of the other two. The edibles have really helped with his chronic pain, but sometimes make him sleepy. Argyle really helped fine-tune the exact right strain to do the most good. Gareth doesn't understand it all, something about being full spectrum, but Gareth's just happy they finally found something to help him. When Argyle retired from the food industry, he started a dispensary. Gareth doesn't know from personal experience, but word is, he's got good shit. Which is unsurprising. He always did. At first, Steve resisted, and Eddie and Gareth both insisted that this wasn't an issue. Anything that helps him is more than welcome. Argyle's brought balms, creams, tinctures, you name it. They've tried it all on him. But the edibles seem to be the best fit for Steve. After they all got used to Steve using them, there have been many long conversations about Eddie and him trying it themselves for all their aches and pains. They just haven't. Legal or not. Maybe after this anniversary is over. Gareth isn't concerned about it leading them back to hard drugs, not anymore. Giving up their sobriety, even a little, after 40 years, still feels like a big fucking deal. He knows, down deep, that this isn't the same thing, not at all. Steve keeps everything in a little biometric safe. Eddie teases that it's to keep him out, but it's really because Steve's just scared to death the grandkids will get into it. A lot of it looks like candy, after all. Gareth is a little worried they'd make Eddie even more paranoid than he already is, but of course, it could go the other way and mellow his ass out. He teased him that maybe it'd still make his dick hard, but Eddie was quick to assure him that his dick was still working fine on its own. More than Gareth needed to know, but okay, good for him. And Steve. Argyle nods towards Steve. New item. Think it might have been too much for our good buddy over here, Argyle says, and Gareth nods. Gareth sits on the love seat with Di and falls asleep. Hey, Dingus! Robin shouts, and Steve hears that just fine, that's for damn sure. Skidding up, fast for him, and hugging her to his chest, tight. Rob, he says, and just holds on to her. Gareth wishes she lived closer, wishes she was with them daily. That's just not how her life shook out. Living in Hawkins wasn't for her, and they understand that. But Steve misses her, all the time. Gareth knows he does. I'm sorry I'm late, she says, and Steve shakes his head. He clearly doesn't care, so long as she's here now. They call on Jonathan and Argyle, and eventually even Steve, to come sing Roll Me Up and Smoke Me When I Die, and it's a fucking hoot. They each take a verse, and Gareth does the choruses with Eddie, and it's hard to get through without laughing their asses off. Di, Robin, and Nancy all sit in the booth and are clearly having fun watching this play out. Steve would never allow himself to be recorded singing if he was sober. Gareth knows that. And Eddie swore it was just for fun as he ushered them into the studio, hands on their shoulders, guiding them right where he wanted them. But Gareth knows Eddie. This will make the final cut. He's sure of it. Beyond that, Gareth doesn't know what they'll release. Eddie is notorious for shoving things in his vault, so it could be a single or a 10-disc compilation. Neither would surprise Gareth at this point. They get them all to stay for one more and con the women into coming in for the booth to all sing, with a little help from my friends, together. Gareth almost ruins the take when Eddie points at Steve, making him take the line. I get high with a little help from my friends. And that makes Argyle and Jonathan giggle in the background, still stoned as shit. Di reaches over and grips Steve's hand as she sings, Would you believe in love at first sight? Steve looks down at her and finishes the line. I'm certain it happens all the time. And then Steve leans down and whispers in her ear and Di smiles. Robin is at his other side, and Steve is teasing her, pushing her towards the mic. Argyle and Jonathan take the next. I get high with a little help from my friends. And can barely get through without laughing. They're all old as dirt, but they still know how to have fun with each other. It's funny that although it's been years, decades, it's still a little weird that Eddie and him are the sober ones in the room right now. That's crazy. They've eaten dinner together, and now they are arguing on what to do. Nobody just wants to call a night. We could play celebrity, Di says, and the girls shake their heads. No way. We never know anybody you old people think are celebrities, Gracie says, and Gareth laughs. You guys just come up with names, like Wildcat Goldthwait or whatever. Bobcat Goldthwait? Gareth asks, assuming that's who she means. If you say so, she says, skeptical. Gareth laughs. Taboo? Di suggests instead. God, no, Steve says. Gareth and Eddie cheat. They always have a way to get to a word in their own secret code. Gareth laughs. Steve's not wrong. Eddie and him are very good at any games like that. Anything that requires intimate knowledge of your partner. He's certain they could wipe the floor with any of the married couples playing the newlywed game as partners. They should play that, with them against Steve and Robin, Jonathan and Argyle, the girls. A best friends edition. He thinks Eddie and him would win. They sit around, the studio abandoned for the day. Eddie had a doctor's appointment, so the rest of them are just hanging around, waiting for him to get back. He's fine, Di says when she sees Gareth looking at the clock for the 100th time. I know, Gareth says. I still worry. She pats him on the knee. I know you do, but he's good, just being Eddie. And Eddie and Steve blow back in an hour later. Steve winks at him, so Gareth relaxes. They get back into the studio now that whatever ailment Eddie had dreamed up overnight has been settled. Eddie is tuning Dragon Slayer, so Gareth sits and waits. Here, Eddie finally says, and tries to hand over Dragon Slayer to Gareth. What? Gareth asks, not taking it from Eddie's hands. You're playing the rhythm guitar on this one, Eddie says, pushing it closer to him. The hell if I am? Gareth laughs. He can sorta, kinda, maybe play the guitar, but not good enough to be on the album. That's nuts. Not when Eddie's sitting right there. Eddie just gives him a look, so Gareth takes the guitar from him. There's no drums, so just do it, Eddie says. Gareth nods reluctantly. Eddie picks up the other guitar and gives him the rhythm. Like this, he says, and strums hard and steady, and Gareth follows him until he has it. But it doesn't sound as good as it does coming from Eddie's fingers. He should really just do both and layer them. Steve plays the piano, a dark, bleak, low sound, and Gareth plays the guitar against Eddie's more skilled fingers, while Eddie sings this scary religious Johnny Cash song. Gareth's really going to have to talk to him. It's one thing when Eddie insists on playing some old gospel music, stuff Wayne used to listen to sometimes. Gareth gets that, he supposes. It sounds like childhood, not church. He might not believe the message, but he likes the sound of it too. But this is just too much. Come here, Steve says quietly. Gareth follows Steve into the garage. What's wrong? Gareth asks as soon as he closes the door behind them. Nothing. I just wanted to tell you that he has some vocal cord atrophy, Steve says. What does that mean? Gareth asks. That doesn't sound good. You don't want things to atrophy, he's pretty sure. That he's old, Steve teases, putting his hand on Gareth's shoulder. It means he's fine. His lungs are fine. His voice is just old, like the rest of us. Gareth takes a breath and is relieved. He doesn't want Eddie to lose his singing voice. That's way better than anything else he thought it might be. Did he freak out? Gareth asks. No, not really, Steve says. He was more worried about an oddly shaped mole on his arm. And the mole? Gareth asks. Melted chocolate from the candy bar he ate in the car. Steve laughs, and Gareth laughs with him. Yeah, that sounds like Eddie. Maybe he needs glasses, Gareth offers. Well, we all know that, Steve says, with all the affection in the world. Not gonna happen, though. Eddie will wear cheaters if he absolutely has to, but other than that, he's just knocking around, half-blind. The cataract surgery several years ago fixed his distance vision, but he's refusing to fix his up-close, Gareth guesses. Tell him he could see you better, if he'd finally cave, Gareth suggests, and Steve points at him, agreeing with that idea. That might work. And how are your moles? Gareth asks. If anyone has mole concerns, it's Steve. All there, accounted for, and non-cancerous, Steve says, and Gareth's glad. Their generation spent way too much time in the sun getting burned, and that's a real concern. He's had things cut out and sent off, almost all of them have by now, but it's never been anything too scary. But he wishes they were all just melted chocolate. Steve, Robin, and Di are sitting at the kitchen bar, having coffee, just talking. Gareth is pretty sure Robin planned her arrival just for this, so she'd be able to make the most of her time here. Sure, she got to see everyone else, but it's Steve and Di that she wants to spend her time with. Gareth knows that. Gareth goes out to meet Eddie on the patio. They sit outside at the table, a wide variety of THC products between them. From old-school weed to edible to tinctures, Argyle left a little bit of everything, with explicit explanations of each strain, each item. Steve set it all up and explained what was what. I haven't done anything with them. Gareth still isn't sure he wants to. It's legal. It's weed. He's not all that concerned, but he's been totally sober for 40 years. You wanna? Gareth asks and looks at Eddie. Not really, do you? Gareth shakes his head. He doesn't. He puts it all away again. Eddie says, I know it's just weed. I know that. I like that we've actually fucking stayed sober. That we did it. I didn't know if either of us could back then. It was hard. Gareth reaches over and squeezes Eddie's hand. I know. Eddie smiles. If we make it to 100, let's do shrooms. Gareth laughs long and hard at that mental image, but nods, agreeing. If they both make it until Eddie's 100, Gareth will definitely do shrooms with him, for sure. They go back inside, back into the studio. They've been dragging their feet. They've only got one song left on the list. Flights are being arranged. Their friends, their family, are getting ready to go back to their regular lives. You ready, kid? Eddie asks, looking back at Gareth. As I'll ever be, Gareth says. Eddie asks for the backing track, the acoustic guitar that Eddie had laid down by himself first, and then the bass he did after. And then Eddie starts playing Sweetheart, making a soft crying sound come out of her. It's haunting and beautiful. Gareth joins him on the drums, and Jonathan starts playing the piano. I'm closing the book on the pages and the text, and I don't really care what happens next. I'm gone. Eddie's as good as he ever was. Gareth watches his hands, his old thick fingers making magic, making music. Gareth looks at Jonathan playing the piano, making it look easy, and it's just the three of them, bringing this session to a close. Now it'll just be on Eddie and Mike to produce it. Some of the kids are going to help, because it's a family affair, just the way Eddie's always wanted their music to be. Gareth knows Eddie will use Mike, use the kids, to bring out the best of everything, to make it tell the story that Eddie wants to tell. And life goes on. Everyone slowly leaves town, until it's just the four of them again. It's familiar, and Gareth sits with Eddie at the kitchen table. Eddie's writing out the track lists by hand. His handwriting has grown a little cramped with age, but still looks like Eddie's. They're going to use them on the backs of the albums. Eddie wanted Gareth to do one of them, but Gareth likes Eddie's handwriting, thinks it looks better, so he urged him to just do them himself. They debate the track lists, the order of the songs, but Gareth is really just the sounding board for Eddie. He doesn't care what Eddie picks as long as Eddie's happy. I think it's going to be 2, Eddie says, and Gareth nods. 2 is more conservative than he predicted after all the tracks they recorded during this last month. Maybe 3, Eddie says, and Gareth smiles. That sounds more likely. Jonathan did the pictures, tight close-ups on their hands, the welcome sign coming into Hawkins. Jonathan and Will are going to put the designs together. Self-releasing an album is so much easier these days. Add in their money, and they have control over the whole thing. Nothing is happening with this that Eddie doesn't sign off on. It's his baby, start to finish. The rest of them are just along for the ride. The album is out of their hands, off to be pressed, and today they are driving to their appointment for their new tattoo. Eddie's all worked up beside him in the passenger seat. Eddie used to like to get tattoos, but today he really, really seems scared. Gareth hates it. They shouldn't have even made this appointment. Gareth should have known better. What if I die of an infection after? Eddie asks, looking at Gareth. Eddie has never once had an infected tattoo. Not even the kitchen table once he got when he was a teenager. You won't get an infection, Gareth assures. But if you don't want to do it this time, if you're ready to be done, we don't have to. It's okay to stop. Petey is retired, but his son is still tattooing. He does good work, too. Eddie knows that, but Eddie still looks unsure, nervous. Gareth tries to help him out. They'll probably blow out anyway with our old thin skin, so maybe we should just stop while we're ahead, Gareth offers, trying to give him a plausible reason to bow out that isn't just Eddie's scared. It's been a great tradition, but it doesn't have to last forever. Nothing does. Eddie nods, and Gareth pulls over at the turnback spot. He'll call Junior when they get back home and tell him they aren't coming, and that he'll pay for the tattoos anyway for wasting his time. He knows he'll understand. Gareth watches the traffic closely, making sure he's judging the speed and distance right, still after all these years. He doesn't want to kill Eddie and himself in a car wreck. He gets ready to pull out, and Eddie speaks again. No, I want to do it. What if not doing it is bad luck? Eddie asks. Eddie, Gareth says, turning to look at him. What's going on? This is extra worried, even for you. They want to do Steve's hip again. What if he dies on the table? Gareth reaches over and takes both of Eddie's hands. Steve's not doing his hip again. You know he's not. What if he has to? What if he breaks one and doesn't have a choice? Eddie asks, always jumping to the worst-case scenario these days. And we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, Gareth promises. I don't want you to have your knee done again, Eddie says. There's nothing wrong with either of Gareth's knees right now. Eddie knows that. Okay, I won't, Gareth just says. It's easier to agree than to try and negotiate for the future what-ifs. If Gareth needs a knee done later, we'll have time to ease Eddie into the idea. He looks back at the road. Tattoo or no tattoo? Gareth asks. Tattoo, Eddie says. Sure. And at the shop, he's Eddie, acting like this wasn't something he was fretting about an hour ago. They get two horses, crossing the river, with them as the riders. They're probably their last tattoos, Gareth knows that, so he pays close attention, watches every minute. And if somehow they do find themselves back here 10 years from now, he'll do it all over again. Happily. Back at Harrington House, Eddie shows off his tattoo to Steve, who oohs and ahs appropriately. Eddie doesn't say he was worried, and Gareth's not going to tattle on him. He's sure Steve knows anyway. Steve knows everything there is to know about Eddie by now. There's no secrets amongst any of them, not really. There can't be. But especially not between Eddie and Steve. Steve's taken care of Eddie through all his worsts and still loved him like they were always his bests. The printer called. I think the pressing will take about a month, Steve tells them, and Gareth smiles. Steve's still managing their shit, all these years later. It's about time to announce it, to open the pre-orders, and that's scary. There are CDs and vinyl and cassettes, and it's so weird. It feels like the early 90s again, when all the formats were still being made at the same time. Of course, streaming is a big chunk of it today, and look at that all lined up, too. But Gareth worries. What if nobody's interested after all these years? That's a total possibility. A lot of their fans have aged with them, after all. And it's not the genre that they usually play. Not that that's totally unusual, not with all the covers Corroded Coffin often played. But this is different. Eddie leaned into the country of it all. He didn't make them metal. Not this time. If it sells zero copies, it still can't take away the making of it. That was the good part. The part that Gareth will remember. Cherish. That they got to do this last album. All together. 50 years later. 3 months later. The driver eases to a stop, and Gareth gets out of the back seat of the black town car and waits. Di slides out behind him, and he helps her to her feet. Steve climbs out of the front seat, and they all pause and wait. Gareth stands still and waits for Eddie to come around the other side of the car before they start climbing up the steps, all 10 of them, one for each life lost, as they head up to the monument that sets out along the road in the middle of the woods, not far from where their plane went down. Eddie was finally ready to revisit this place where they lost so much, just as he turned 80. The black granite glimmers as the sunlight bounces off them, barely peeking through as the trees are swaying in the light breeze shading the whole area. It's beautiful. Peaceful. He thought this was an ugly place, but it's anything but. It's just that the last time they were here it was chaotic, and they were full of fear and pain. Scared. Also scared. Looking at it now, it looks different than he remembered. He never thought they'd be back here. Eddie, especially. But Eddie was ready. So they came. And now, with 50 years of distance, Gareth can appreciate this for what it is. He can appreciate that it was constructed with love. The townspeople that helped save them. A few of the volunteer first responders are still around. Gareth had assumed they were older men, real adults taking charge. But he realizes that a lot of them were kids, just like they were, in their early 20s and in over their heads, just doing the very best they could do to save the lives of strangers. And they did. Gareth sits on the bench behind the monument that Goody and Jeff share and stares at it and smiles. It's good to see them there, etched in stone. Eddie sits down beside him and pats his leg. Gareth smiles at him, and they both watch as Steve and I walk around, checking everything out, taking pictures. There's a flat stone on the ground with the full passenger list engraved on it. Gareth looks at it. They're pushing 80. They're still here. That's a miracle. They survived this and then continued to survive. It won't last forever, can't, but they've made it 50 years longer than they should have. 50. Maybe their luck wasn't so bad after all. There's a guest book, and Gareth and I sign it, and then Gareth watches as Eddie signs it. Eddie draws a little devil, a lot like the one he once drew for their Hellfire Club shirts and the CC letters, like he drew them for their logo. Gareth laughs. He's still ornery. That's never changed. Steve signs it. Steve Harrington, road manager, head babysitter. And Gareth loves it. They aren't sad here today, not like Gareth thought they'd be. This is celebrating their friends that they loved so much. Still love so much. They stay for a while until they hear the crunch of gravel of another car coming down the dirt road in the distance. That's their cue. Eddie helps Steve back down the steps, though Gareth is pretty sure Steve has it under control, and they get back in the car. It's quiet for a moment, but not uncomfortable, before Eddie finally speaks. It was peaceful. I liked it. Gareth smiles over at him. I liked it too. Losing Goody and Jeff, losing the band and their other friends, that's never faded, not really. It's a hurt they've carried for half a century. But now, sometimes, they can find peace in the memory of what was and what came after. Their lives didn't end up how they'd thought they would. They had to pick up the pieces and make something new out of the wreckage. And Gareth thinks they have. He's had a good life with Di, with the girls, with Eddie and Steve. Eddie reaches up and pokes Steve's shoulder for no discernible reason, other than to get his attention, Gareth supposes. Steve turns and smiles at him, and Eddie grins, happy, having gotten what he wanted. Eddie's 80 and Gareth's 75. Gareth doesn't know how many years any of them have left together, but he's going to enjoy this now, and not worry about the inevitable end. He's going to focus on the present. Not the past, not the future, but right now. I heard we sold out of the first pressing, Gareth says, looking over at Eddie, across Di in between them. Well, yes, we did, Eddie says, and it makes Gareth smile. Steve's ordered twice as many for the next go-round. Look at us, still making money as old geezers. Gareth laughs, but he doesn't really care about the money, and he knows Eddie doesn't either. They care about the music. They care about each other. Do you hear that new song that Mike sent over? Eddie asks, and Gareth hasn't got around to it yet. Gareth says so. It was from one of the bands that worked their way up from their grant program. Eddie likes to hear the music they're making, and sometimes, like now, he likes to make their own versions, just for themselves. Well, I want to play that when we get home. I think we can do a good version, Eddie says, poking at his phone. Finally, Steve reaches back and takes it from him. And then there's music Gareth's never heard coming through the car speakers. It's good. Great. But he hears what Eddie's heard, and yeah, they can do something with this together. Different, if not better. And Gareth smiles.
And if you follow your feelings, you follow your dreams, you might find the forest there in the tree.
1980. Waterproof assassins, Goody says, and Jeff laughs next to him. What does that even mean? Jeff asks, and Goody just shrugs. Gareth is glad Jeff doesn't know either. He was scared he was the only one that didn't understand. I still like Corroded Coffin, Eddie says, looking at the three of them, sitting there, gathered in Gareth's garage for the third time this week. Today, his mom has brought them Kool-Aid and homemade cookies, and these three older boys are talking over each other, making plans. Big plans. Gareth doesn't know about any of this. He looks down at his drums. Okay, Corroded Coffin is fine for now, I guess, Goody says, They are all nodding, and Eddie is looking at Gareth, waiting. Gareth nods slowly, unsure. Eddie smiles at him. "What song should we play first?" Jeff asks. "TNT?" Gareth doesn't know what that is. He squirms on his drum stool. "What would you like to play, kid?" Eddie asks, looking at Gareth. "He's the baby. Who cares what he wants to play?" Goody says, laughing, and Gareth tucks his elbows in, like he can protect himself that way. He kind of just wants to keep playing by himself. At least then nobody's staring at him. "Might be helpful if the drummer knows the song," Jeff says, smiling at Gareth. "That's what these negotiations are all about," Eddie says, squatting down next to Gareth. "We can all learn new songs from each other, but we need to find out what we all know now if we're going to play anything today," Eddie finishes. "Well, I'm not playing the wheels on the bus," Goody says, being mean. He's kind of mean. Gareth thought Eddie was the one to be scared of, but he was wrong. Eddie's nice. "Give me some suggestions, kid. Anything at all," Eddie says softly, crouched right next to Gareth, ignoring Goody and Jeff arguing in the front part of the garage. Gareth doesn't know what to say. He doesn't want Goody to make fun of him. But Eddie is waiting, so Gareth finally says quietly, "I like the Rolling Stones."
"Awesome, me too," Eddie says with a smile. "You know Paint It Black?"
Gareth nods. He does.
"Okay, let's play Paint It Black then," Eddie says, and he starts them on the guitar and looks at Gareth.
Gareth is nervous, but he comes in with the drum beat, pretty close to on time. He's really nervous. But it's fun. This is fun. It sounds okay, too, Gareth thinks.
They play together all afternoon, and Eddie teaches Gareth what songs he doesn't know, sitting behind his drum kit, looking way too tall for it.
But he can give Gareth the beat, the time, the feel, and then Gareth can copy what Eddie has done. TNT is kind of simple. He can do that. And Jeff smiles at him, happy they're playing what he wanted to play. Makes Gareth smile back at him. He can follow Eddie's instructions, he's pretty sure. Eddie suggests Drive My Car. Gareth thinks that's kind of weird, but okay. Then Eddie says he wants to hear just the bass and the drums, and that makes Gareth nervous. But Goody brings his bass closer to Gareth, and he starts playing with him, and Gareth sits up a little taller. He watches Goody, not Eddie, for a while. They sound pretty good together, the rhythm section. Gareth can totally tell what this is, even with no guitars, no lyrics. He smiles, and Goody smiles back at him for a brief second. And they loop to the beginning, and Eddie and Jeff both bring in the guitars, the vocals. When they finish, and Goody and Jeff go home, Eddie sits down next to him.
"You did great, kid," Eddie says.
"I was nervous," Gareth admits.
"That's okay. I get nervous, too," Eddie says.
"We'll have you thinking you're a rock star in no time." Gareth laughs. "That seems unlikely."
"Can you show me some of those metal songs that you guys want to play?" Gareth asks. He wants to be able to play the songs they want to play.
Eddie smiles. "Definitely." And with Goody and Jeff gone, they play together. Just the two of them. For a little while longer. The end.
Me and my partner, my only best friend, here for the moment and then gone with the wind.
Author's chapter notes. I know I left a few people out and it was by design. They are in their mid to late 70s. Reality tells me not all of these people would still be alive. However, I didn't want to set anything in stone. I want to leave it, so that if you wanted to believe they've lost friends, they've lost friends. Or if you want to believe they were there, just unmentioned, that can be true too. Or maybe they just couldn't get away to join everyone else in Hawkins this time. That happens too. A video of the Beatles, but it's only bass and drums. It's fun, you can totally tell what it is. The replica of Sweetheart was originally written into Tuesdays and then cut, because the interviews didn't end up going that far into the future. But here's what Eddie originally had to say. Eddie Munson, rhythm guitar and songwriter. After they inducted us in the Hall of Fame, they really wanted to display our instruments. Gareth loaned them his drums from that time period, and Goody and Jeff's families lent their instruments. But I couldn't. I couldn't let Sweetheart go. Anything could happen. I offered them Hercules, but they really wanted Sweetheart, and I understood that. She was what everyone associated me with. But she's from Steve, so it wasn't happening. They asked, and I agreed to have a replica of her made. I took her to the artist and stayed for hours while he photographed every blemish, every mark. The replica is remarkable, truly. I played it, and it's a lovely guitar. But it's not Sweetheart. You could blindfold me, and I could tell them apart in my hands. You can see one of Gary Rossington's replica guitars they made that is new, but looks worn and well-loved like the original. Fake broken neck and all. The original of Bernice did go to the Hall of Fame to be displayed. Sweetheart did not. That was the inspiration for the Sweetheart replica, though I don't think Eddie would approve of them being sold, just having one single guitar made to go on display. Johnny Cash's American Recordings albums were produced by Rick Rubin, who did Wildflowers. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers did a lot of the backing for these tracks. You can clearly hear Tom harmonizing on I Won't Back Down, Sea of Heartbreak, Solitary Man, etc., or The Running Kind, where he's fully credited as singing with Cash. You'll hear Tom's voice counting them in, or just talking before or after a take. It's pretty fun, and knowing a lot of the music is coming from Mike Campbell and the other Heartbreakers is just great. Johnny Cash once wrote to Tom Petty in a card, "You're a good man to be around the river with." And Petty's response was, "And that's all I want to be, a good man to ride the river with." I think about that a lot, and I think it applies to Gareth and Eddie. They each found a good man to ride the river with. Waters weren't always calm, but the company was good and trusted. The saying dates back to foraging rivers on horseback during a trail drive, as far as I understand. So to trust a friend to cross a roaring river with you was the highest of compliments. I imagine Eddie got this saying from Wayne. And just for fun, here's the list of Eddie and Gareth's matching tattoos. 1995, Crow to Coffin tribute. 2005, Change is Gonna Come. 2015, Oak Tree, You're in My Way. 2025, Best Friend Snacks. 2035, Question. 2045, Horses with River. Wake Up Time, Chapter 2. Jones and Munson, Going, Going, Gone. Disc 1. 1. You Can't Make Old Friends. 2. I Don't Go to Funerals. 3. Sick, Sober, and Sorry. 4. On the Road Again. 5. My Shit's Fucked Up. 6. I Won't Back Down. 7. Still Not Dead. 8. The Race Is On. 9. Last Man Standing. 10. End of the Line. 11. The Running Kind. 12. If I Could Only Fly. 13. Louisiana Woman, Mississippi Man. 14. Me and My Partner. 15. Desperado. 16. Old Age and Treachery. 17. Live Forever. 18. It's All Going to Pot. 19. Everybody's Talking. 20. Just Breathe. 21. Forever Young. 22. Purple Rain. 23. Make You Feel My Love. 24. Going Down Rockin'. 25. Leave You With a Smile. 26. Please Don't Tell Me How the Story Ends. Disc 2. 1. It's Hard to Be Humble. 2. The Story. 3. Heart of Gold. 4. The Glory of Love. 5. Drift Away. 6. Unchained Melody. 7. What Becomes of the Broken Hearted. 8. Silver Stallion. 9. I Could Write a Book About You. 10. Man of Constant Sorrow. 11. Southern Accents. 12. Funny How Time Slips Away. 13. Sunday Morning Coming Down. 14. In My Life. 15. Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. 16. Yesterday, When I Was Young. 17. Whiskey River. 18. Me and Paul. 19. We'll meet again. 20. The wait. 21. I'm the only hell my mama ever raised. 22. Further on up the road. 23. I don't need you rocking chair. 24. Keep me in your heart. 25. God's problem child. 26. Piece of work. Disc 3. 1. I can get off on you. 2. With a little help from my friends. 3. Blue skies. 4. If I can find a clean shirt. 5. Chattanooga sugar babe. 6. Worry be gone. 7. Ladies love outlaws. 8. Dusty bottles. 9. Bridge over troubled water. 10. He was a friend of mine. 11. Stay away from the cocaine train. 12. Live this long. 13. You're still in these crazy arms of mine. 14. Sunny side of the street. 15. I may be used. Baby, I ain't used up. 16. The man comes around. 17. My way. 18. Yesterday. 19. I've been everywhere. 20. The road goes on forever. 21. Homeward bound. 22. Last call. 23. Going, going, gone. 24. Grave digger. 25. Roll me up and smoke me when I die. 26. Tuesday's gone. Author notes. If you've never heard Willie Nelson's cover of Dave Matthews' song Gravedigger, it is so good. The drums are good, too. It was a great song to imagine for both Gareth and Eddie. Willie was about 75 when his version was released, in comparison to Dave, who was about 35. Watch them play it together at Farm Aid. Seeing Willie's face and hearing his voice as he sings about not burying your own children is haunting. He lost a son in 1991. It made me emotional thinking of Eddie and Gareth playing this, thinking of Goody's parents burying their only baby. And I would have added Willie Nelson's version of The Scientist to the album if it was available on Spotify. But for some reason, it isn't. That's a shame, but here it is on YouTube. For fun, instead of sad, here's his old pal Waylon poking a little fun at Willie. It's not just that he mimics the voice, it's that he does the Willie back freezing, that beautifully unique cadence of Willie's. It's called rubato. Sinatra did it too. Two different sounds, but listen closely. They are both masters of playing with time and phrasing. Willie was obviously a big inspiration for older Eddie. If you like rock stuff, watch this weekend's 2023 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Disney+. Willie was inducted along with Sheryl Crow, Kate Bush, and Al Cooper, who produced Lynyrd Skynyrd. And of course, Gary Rossington is featured in the In Memoriam. And what song did they use? Tuesday's Gone. So it really felt like it had a bunch of ties to this fic universe and Stranger Things. And then cap it off, Willie said in his speech, quote, "And when Ray, Charles, and I got together, we never asked each other what to do, whether to do a soul song or a rock song or a country song. We just sang the songs we loved." End quote. Which, Lord, that couldn't have fit better for this part or for Eddie and Corroded Coffin in general. They were a metal band that played for all genres. They played the songs they loved, and when Eddie and Gareth grew old, they just still played the songs they wanted to play, together, no matter the genre. Speaking of Willie, please listen to the stripped-down version of On the Road Again with Alanis Morissette and Willie on the playlist. Gorgeous. Now, if you want something a little more fun, check out Warren Zevon's My Shit's Fucked Up. It's a lament on aging, but not quite as maudlin. Also from him, there's Keep Me in Your Heart, which was written after his terminal cancer diagnosis. It's actually a fascinating subgenre of music to me. Older singers putting out album songs about death as it approaches. Listen to Everybody's Talkin', as covered by Glenn Campbell, on his final studio album, Adios, after he's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and it's a totally different song. There was an interview with his son, and he said he had to take it line by line to record, but the melody was never lost. Rick Rubin produced Cash's American album series at the end of his life, as well as Wildflowers. So thank you, Rick Rubin, for the music you helped these artists make. It's beautiful. And here's Keith Richards very recently still playing the blues on Sonny, his guitar at 79. The same age as Eddie in this look into the future. Ringo is still a solid drummer and running around the stage at 82. Gareth shouldn't be so scared of 80. Willie is touring at 90. Eddie is fine. And Keith playing with Willie on Willie's 90th birthday. Money can't buy that. It only comes with advanced age. It's absolutely amazing that Willie has that voice at 90. Older for sure, but he's still Willie. And it feels like this version of Eddie, when Keith gave his usual, quote, "It's good to be here. It's good to be anywhere," end quote. Have you ever wanted to see Willie Nelson wearing cut-off jean shorts, singing with Waylon, who was wearing a members-only jacket, like Steve, with no shirt underneath? Well, it's your lucky day. Here they are at Farm Aid 2 singing I Can't Get Off on You together. This was 4th of July, 1986, and apparently it was a very hot day. But, man, I wouldn't think a members-only jacket would breathe. Bob Dylan's Going, Going, Gone was backed by the band. The drums were the great LeVon Helms, and that fantastic crying electric guitar was Robbie Robertson. Bob Dylan was actually only about 33 when it was released. Forever Young was also on this album. Podfriggers note. For all the videos mentioned in these author's notes, please go to the original fic to find them. The end.
Me and my partner, that's all that I've got to help me survive what I am and am not. Some days were too long, and some nights were too hot, but we did what we done and forgave us.